Okay, Daniel chapter 7. We're starting a new section in the book of Daniel, and the first six chapters there's some prophecy in them, but there's a lot of great stories in those first six chapters. Those are the Daniel in the lion's den and all that, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and all that kind of great stuff. Now we get into some interesting stuff. Daniel chapter 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Now, this dream or this vision that Daniel, it's not a dream, it's a vision. A vision is something with your eyes wide open. You are laying there and you are seeing things. I had the weirdest thing last night. And I was tired. My wife got out of the bed, and it was dark, and while she was coming back, and there's no lights on, and I'm looking up, and I thought I like saw something, you know, and it was the clock face hanging on the wall and the shadows, and I thought it was like, is that an angel or what am I seeing? Well, I was awake. I wasn't asleep. I was awake, kind of barely. Okay, it's a night vision. I mean, Well, Daniel, he's got this vision. A vision is when you're awake. Dream is when you're asleep. So he's got this vision, and it's going to be very similar. Those of you who went through Daniel chapter 2 with us, Nebuchadnezzar's dream that he had of this statue with four different divisions in the different empires of the world, Daniel chapter 7 is a parallel. And you almost can't study one without the other. So if you get lost tonight, extra credit homework, go home and read Daniel chapter 2. Okay, Nebuchadnezzar's thing was of four world empires. This is of the same I'm winding down, need new batteries. It takes place the first year of Belshazzar. It's 553 B.C. Daniel's about 60 plus years old, almost 70. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. The great sea, anybody want to hazard a guess what that is?
Mediterranean, right.
So you have to think context. Where is he? It's the Mediterranean. The four winds are stirring up the great sea. Winds could refer to, it could refer to the northeast, southwest winds like that. But the word wind is both in these ancient languages could not only refer to wind, but also to spirits or angels. So it could be something like that. Verse 3. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the others, from this great sea. These are all going to be empires centered around the Mediterranean. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And you remember Nebuchadnezzar's dream? And the first thing was the head of gold. And who was the head of gold? Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians. This is the same deal. This lion is the Babylonian empire. And it talks about this lion with eagle's wings. The wings are plucked off, and it was given a heart of a man. Does that make you think of anything? You bet. Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 4, where he was humbled, where he was, for a while he acted like a cow, and he went around going, and he was eating grass, and he was acting very strange, until he looked up and realized there was a God in heaven. And that's where a man's heart is given to him. His pride was taken away. Verse 5, suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. This is the second empire, which was the Medo-Persian Empire, which is the empire that conquered the Babylonians. It says it's raised up on one side of the two joint groups, the Medes and the Persians. The Persians were a little bit stronger, and so that's what that means. It's raised up one side. Verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another, a leopard, which had its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. The leopard represents the next empire that conquered the Medes and the Persians, which was the Greek Empire, headed up by Alexander the Great. He's the one that conquered the Persians. He conquered the world. He did it in 4 years. This is in the 330 BC. He conquered the world in 4 years without jets, without tanks, without motorized vehicles. It's an amazing, incredible thing. I mean, the known world from Greece all the way to India. He died in an early age, and because he had no heirs, his empire was split into four pieces. And that's what this four heads is. The beast also had four heads. Each part of his empire was ruled over by one of his generals. Verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong, and had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it and had 10 horns. So what was the empire that conquered the Greeks? The Romans, okay. It was the Age of Empires or something like that. Sorry, it's a game we play at home, Age of Empires. So the fourth beast is the Roman Empire. They crushed the world with their armies. It had 10 horns. Well, let's get into that in a second. Verse 8. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up from among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels like a burning fire. The Ancient of Days. Anybody want to hazard a guess on that? I'm not going to look at you because you know all the answers. Anybody else want to hazard a guess on the Ancient of Days who sits on a throne? God. It's God. It's a picture that he's pictured like a really old man. He's the Ancient of Days because he's been around since forever. And when you say that about somebody that's old, you say, well, he's just been around since forever. Well, when you say that about God, it's true. He has been around since forever. So that's he's Ancient of Days. Well, that's who God is. And specifically, we would say God the Father. Verse 10, a fiery, not that Jesus is any less old, but you'll see. I think this is the Father. Verse 10, a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000,000s ministered to him. That means 1,000 times 1,000. That's how many? That's 1,000,000. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were open. This is a picture of judgment. This is a picture of God's judgment. The throne is surrounded by millions standing before God, getting ready to judge. This is not a New Testament concept that God's going to judge the world someday. This is an ancient concept. This goes back to the very beginning. It's in the book of Psalms. Psalm 9, verse 8 says, he shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall administer judgment for the peoples in uprightness. Psalm 96:13 says, for he is coming to judge the earth. He shall judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with truth. You can even go all the way back to the book of beginnings, the book of Genesis. Remember the story where, this is in Genesis 18, where Abraham is negotiating with God over whether or not to wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah? Because God shows up one day and drops this hint on Abraham because his nephew is living in Sodom. And so God thinks, well, you know, I'll do my buddy Abraham a favor, and I'll let him know about what's going to happen. So God says, I'm going to wipe this place out. This place stinks. It's just totally stinks. And so Abraham starts to negotiate with God. Well, what if there's 50 righteous left? Will you wipe it out if there's 50 righteous people in it? And then he throws in this phrase. He says, will not the judge of the whole earth do that which is right? Great principle. He is the judge of the whole earth, and he will do what's right. God will judge. He made the place. He owns the place. He has a right to judge it. He has the right. God's judgment is also flawless. It says the court was seated and the books were opened. There's a record. There's a record of everything. The books were opened and judgment starts. God's judgment is flawless. I don't know if any of you have had dealings with the justice system of the United States. There's lots of mixed review out there about the justice system of the United States. It's probably better than anything else in the world, but it's not always perfect. And I've heard some horror stories, and maybe it's because I only talk to the inmates who all declare that they're innocent. But I've heard some tremendous horror stories of things that can happen in our human justice system. I don't know if you've watched any of the Supreme Court hearings. Have you been watching the Judge Alito things? I don't know. Some of the way the questioning goes, I wonder if there's any justice in the Senate. I just wonder, gosh, if they were judged by the same judgment that they're judging this guy. I don't know. It's just interesting stuff. I know quite a few folks who've been cheated by the system, and not everyone gets a fair hearing. A defendant in a lawsuit involving large sums of money was saying to his lawyer, "If I lose this case, I'll be ruined. It's in the judge's hands now," said the lawyer. "Would it help if I send the judge a box of cigars?" asked the defendant. "Oh, no," said the lawyer. This judge is a stickler for ethical behavior. A stunt like that would prejudice him against you. He might even find you in contempt of the court. In fact, you shouldn't even smile at the judge." Within the course of time, the judge rendered a decision in favor of the defendant. As the defendant left the courthouse, he said to the lawyer, "Thanks for the tip about the cigars. It worked." "Well, I'm sure we would have lost the case if you'd sent them," said the lawyer. "But I did send them," said the defendant. "What? You sent them?" "Yes, that's how we won the case." "Well, I don't understand," said the lawyer. "Well, it's easy. I sent the cheapest cigars I could find to the judge and put the plaintiff's business card inside." "No, that ain't right." You know, where's the justice about that, you know? And sometimes we get kind of cynical about it all. We kind of think, you know, what is it, just a roll of the dice of whether you're going to get a fair hearing or not? You know, sometimes you wonder about that. When it comes to the judgment of God, nobody's going to be able to question it. Nobody's going to say, "Well, did somebody give God a box of cigars, you know, or something like that?" It won't even be an issue. And here's one of the statements about it. It says, the books were opened. In other words, there's records. I would imagine if it was written in 2005 AD, it would say that the video files were accessed. You know, and the person standing before God, and God says, and the accusation is, you know, "You were a blasphemer." "I wasn't a blasphemer. I never blasphemed." And God will say, "Gabriel, roll them." You know, and there it is, right there. You know, it's amazing how the technology has advanced, you know, and how much, it's funny how many pictures I have on my hard drive. It's absolutely amazing to think, what's really amazing, how many pictures Dad has on his hard drive. I mean, my gosh. And you think of the boxes and the slides and how, and now he's just, it's all in his computer, you know. It's just, and I wouldn't doubt that every moment is on record. the books were opened, and God's judgment will happen. And we don't have to worry about God's judgment. It will be right. It will be accurate. Let's move on. Verse 11. Daniel says, I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. Remember, the Ancient of Days showed up. And remember, one of this last beast has 10 horns, and one of the horns had little eyes on it and a mouth, and was speaking. This talking horn, you know, it's your talk to the horn, you know. And not talk to the hand, but talk to the horn. And he says, I watched then because of the sound of the... And here, this is the court of God, and this horn starts speaking. I watched because of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain, and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. And he came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Anybody have a clue who this one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven? Does it ring a bell? Sound like, yeah. Nope, there you go. The answer is Jesus. There you go. It sounds like a New Testament passage, doesn't it? If you want more homework, you can read Revelation 19, talking about that. Then to him, the Son of Man, was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I had a headache or something. He's distressed with this. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. Apparently there's beings around, an angel or something. And says, so he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Here's the interpretation of this strange vision. Those great beasts which are four kings which arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful with its teeth of iron, its nails of bronze, and devoured broken pieces, trampled the residue with its feet. And the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up from which the other three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and mouth and spoke pompous words and whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war with the saints and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Then he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample and break in pieces. Again, this is talking about the Roman Empire. When we were in Daniel chapter 2, this same progression, we saw that there's like two forms of the Roman Empire. There's an earlier form, and there's going to be a latter days form of the Roman Empire where the Antichrist will come out of. You're seeing the same thing here. If you pay attention to the vision, everything isn't all at once. When you looked at the leopard that had four heads, was the Greek Empire that split into four pieces. It didn't start off split into four pieces. It eventually split into four pieces. So it's not like that it's not like when you look at one of these beings, it's like that's just the way it is. No, but there's history involved. There's a progression of time. And so the same with this fourth beast. This same fourth beast actually hops and skips throughout history. The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. Now, I believe these 10 horns are not talking about the days of the ancient Romans, but the days of this coming, or maybe already is, revived Roman Empire. a world power that will sit on top of the old Roman Empire. And it will have, this thing will have 10 parts to it, 10 kings. In Nebuchadnezzar's dream, this Roman Empire was the legs and feet of iron. The legs were of iron, but the feet were a mixture of clay and iron. The legs were the ancient empire. The feet were the later part of the Roman Empire, which had this mixture of, and he said it had a mixture of the weakness of men in it. That's the clay. Clay and the strength of the Roman Empire mixed with the weakness of men. How many toes do most feet have? Don't ask Peter Bright. He's missing one. But most of us have how many toes? 10. I don't think that's a coincidence that there's 10 toes, and here this beast has 10 horns. I think that there's a parallel there. There's a tenfold division in this later Roman Empire. And out of this division, one will arise, which will be the Antichrist. And he will apparently rule or conquer over three of them. Now, whether these are three individuals, whether these are 10 individuals or 10 nations, I don't think you can be dogmatic about it. Because when you study these prophecies, it kind of ebbs and flows in and out of whether it's an individual or whether it's a nation. Verse 25, he, this horn, shall speak pompous words against the Most High. He shall persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Now, he will speak pompous words. The Antichrist will be a proud fellow. And Satan knows all about pride. And so, that, no surprise. It says he will persecute the saints of the Most High. And we believe this specifically means, not the church, but it means the nation of Israel. They're the saints. He will intend to change times and law. Now, it might have to do with a whole new legal system. It may have to do with things like ritual laws. King Jeroboam, when he split the nation after Solomon, and he split the nation from Jeroboam, and he took the 10 northern tribes, he made these types of changes in times and law by changing the holidays, the holy days, so that Passover was on a different month than those in Judah celebrated. So it could be something like this. And it says he will, saints will be given into his hand for time, times, and half a time. You'll see this throughout the book of Daniel. Time, that's one period of time. Times is two, is a period of two. So one plus two, and a half a time. So that's three and a half times. When you go through prophecy and you sort it all out, the upshot of it is, we think this is talking about a period of 3.5 years. The period we know as the tribulation is 7 years long. That comes from Daniel chapter 9, which we'll do next week, where the Antichrist makes a covenant with the nation of Israel for a period of 7 years. In the middle of that 7 years, he will break the covenant, and we think that means that he will declare himself to be God. And then a time of great persecution, things will really get bad for the last 3.5 years. And that's this 3.5 years. This time where they will be, the Jews will suffer persecution like you have not seen yet. And we think World War II was bad. Wait until the Antichrist comes about. And it's really no big surprise when you hear the things that President Ahmadinejad, or whatever the guy is from Iran, says his strangest, craziest things, like, oh, there was no Holocaust. And I just like, you know, where do these people get this stuff? I don't know. Anyway, verse 26. So this Antichrist will arise. Things are going to get really bad. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his throne to consume and destroy it forever. God will prevail against the Antichrist. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. you know what? In the end, we win. Isn't that cool? In the end, we win. Now, gang, there are times when life gets really discouraging, when life stinks, you know? It is not fun. And I hate to say, it's probably not going to get any better. How do you like that? What?
Come to church and pastor and said, well, life's going to get worse. Oh, boy.
You know what? I don't know if it's going to get worse, but there will be more tough times ahead. There are going to be plenty of tough times ahead. Gang, we have it easy here in Orange County. There will be tough times ahead, more tough times ahead. But you know what, gang? In the end, we win. Sometimes there are things that we look forward to that just seem like a sure thing. I can hardly wait till this happens. Boy, I've been looking forward all week for this thing to happen, you know, and you plan your schedule. Maybe you've been planning for weeks, for months, you know, and boy, you can just hardly wait. Just like, boy, you know, what was that, last Wednesday night? I think it was last Wednesday night. You know, boy, were we looking forward to just the bestest thing in the world, another world championship, a national championship for the USG Trojans. Whoa, what an awesome thing. You know, we have been looking forward to this, all this undefeated, you know, title and everything. And, boy, two Heisman Trophy winners versus just a Heisman Trophy nominee. I mean, you know, how much better can it get? I mean, you know, what's it going to be like, 50-30 or something, you know, or maybe 100-50? You know, we're going to totally cream them, you know, and you know, opening kickoff, and boy, the first three downs, and you know, USC couldn't even get off of their 10. It just was like really discouraging. And then they do the punt, and then there was a fumble, and they took over in their 50-yard. And I'm thinking, well, this is the way it's going to be the whole game. Well, this is going to be a fun game, you know. We're going to just cream those Texans, you know. And then USC goes behind, and I'm thinking, you know, I've seen this before. They've done that. They do this trick to you, you know, to make you think that they're losing, you know. But they're going to catch up, you know. And by golly, they caught up. Oh, you know, it come into the fourth quarter, they go ahead. I mean, it was awesome. And what were they had, like 12 points or something at one point? It was just awesome. 5 minutes to go. They're like 12 points ahead. Boy, was that an awesome thing. And then Texas scores a touchdown. And then there wasn't another fumble or something, you know, or I can't remember what it was. And they're down to 19 seconds, and I'm thinking, come on, all they have to do is just hold on for 19 seconds, and they've got this thing won. And it'll be one of those,
boy, was that a nail-biter game? It's the closest game we ever see. But yes,
you know, super champions, you know. And they lose the thing. Oh, my gosh. I was wondering how many people's lives were ruined that night. You know, I would imagine there was a few. Don't you think that there was a few? A few of us, you know. Whose lives, boy, what a bummer. And you know what, gang? Jesus is not going to let you down. Because he will come back. And as discouraging, as depressing as life does get, and we'll get away from here and we'll go into our things and you kind of go through life, and then life piles up on you, and you get overwhelmed, and you get discouraged, and you think, oh man, I just want to quit. But gang, keep going, because we win in the end. We've read the end of the book. We know how this turns out. This is not a first run movie. We're watching a rerun, gang. We know how this thing turns out because we've seen it from God's perspective. We win. We win. We will rule and reign with Jesus Christ. Verse 28, Daniel says, this is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. You know, sometimes the subject of prophecy can be quite disturbing. sometimes it can be quite disturbing. And you know what? I find a little bit pervertedly comforting to think that even the great Daniel, prophet himself, was very, very disturbed by the things that he saw. Prophecy can also be a great motivation to keep things going in the right direction. 2 Peter 3:11 says, "Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness?" Yes, some things are disturbing. You know, every year when we do the prophecy updates every year, part of it I look forward to, part of it I just dread. Sounding like Mr. Doom and Gloom, I feel like I'm supposed to wear one of those sandwich boards. The end is near, you know, or something. And I'm supposed to wear my hair out long and go out on the street and rant and rave or something like that. And I know over the years some people get overly disturbed. But gang, again, it's a reminder: the end is near. We are going to win. We're winning. Daniel chapter 8. For you trivia buffs, chapters 2 through 7 of Daniel are written in Aramaic. That's the language of the Gentiles. And that's probably because the main messages in those chapters are aimed at the Gentiles, the empires of the world. From this point on, chapter 1 and from this point on, are written back in Hebrew. And that's because there will be a focus aimed at God's chosen people, Israel. Verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, the vision appeared to me to Daniel after the one that appeared to me the first time. So, 2 years later, Belshazzar is not going to be conquered by the Persians, by the way, for 12 more years. So this isn't like tomorrow they're going to get knocked off. They've got a little ways to go. I saw in the vision, and so it happened while I was looking, that I was in Shushan, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. So he has another vision, and this one's going to be interpreted also at the end, so I'm going to kind of spoil it for you a little bit and tell you that there's going to be a vision again about two upcoming empires, and it's going to be the Medes and Persians and the Greeks. So he's going to focus on two of those world empires. Verse 3, then I lifted up my eyes and saw, and there standing by the river was a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. Does that sound a little bit like that bear with the side lifted up a little bit? Same idea. This is the Medes and the Persians. Historians from the 4th century tell us that the ancient symbol of the Persian Empire was a ram. And when going out to battle, the emperor would wear a jeweled ram's head. But that must have stunk. The signs of the zodiac have also apparently been linked to various nations, and the sign for Persia is Aries, the ram. So this one actually has some interesting significance to it of the animals that are picked. Verse 4, I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, southward, so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. As I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west. So a new animal appears, a goat, across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. This is going to be guess who? Alexander the Great, the Greeks. Again, remember the 4-year world conquering tour of Alexander? That's without touching the ground. He just whoosh, whoosh, he's there. The sea that surrounds Greece, the Aegean Sea, it's translated the Goat Sea. That's what Aegean means, the Goat Sea. The zodiac sign associated with Greece is Capricorn, which comes from two Greek words, Caper, which is goat, and Cornu, which is horn, goat horn. So it's not a surprise that he picks a goat for the Greeks. Then he came to this goat came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. If you read about Alexander, he was totally ticked off at the Persians. I mean, he could hardly wait to wipe them out. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him and attacked the ram and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Therefore the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in the place of it, four notable horns came up toward the four winds of the heaven. Surprise? No, because that's what would happen. What's amazing is that this is hundreds of years before the Greek Empire. This is, you know, Alexander is not like the latest thing in the paper every morning. You know, just wait, who's that? You know, no, he hasn't been born yet. I mean, this is very amazing prophecies. Verse 9, and out of one of them, out of these four horns, came a little horn which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. Now, I've got my notes wrong. I've got to remember to correct that. One of the four divisions of the Greek Empire, my notes say Roman Empire, the Greek Empire was split into four. One of the parts was called the Syrian Empire, the Syrian Kingdom. And it was ruled at one point by a man named Antiochus Epiphanes from 175 to 164 BC. And he would conquer to the south Egypt, Armenia to the east, and Palestine, which is the glorious or beautiful land. Verse 10, and it grew up to the host of heaven and cast it down, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. Now, we might think the host of heaven might be referring to angels here, but it also could be a reference to the Jews. I could see them being the armies. I could see the Jews being the armies of heaven, the armies of God. When Antiochus Epiphanes came back from his Egyptian campaign, he invaded Judea, captured Jerusalem, robbed the temple, and spread his reign of terror across the land. Verse 11, he then exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, which would be God. God is the prince of the host. And by him, the daily sacrifices were taken away and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Now, Antiochus, one of the things he did in ruling over his area is he tried to change everybody's religion. And so he made changes to the Jewish religion. He set up his own priests and all. He didn't destroy the temple, but he tore down the altar. He built his own altar. He defiled the temple by sacrificing pigs on it. On the altar in Jerusalem, in the temple of Jerusalem, he offered pigs to the god Jupiter. This is an act that is known as an abomination of desolation. It's an abominable thing. It's a horrible, gross, abominable thing that leads to desolation, that leads to God saying, whoa, hands off. There are two abomination desolations spoken of in the Bible. This is the first, and the second is yet to come that the Antichrist will do. Verse 12, because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. Now, it says because of transgression. In other words, the people had been backsliding. They'd been fallen away from the Lord. And so God let them go through this. Verse 13, then I heard a holy one speaking, an angel, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. Now, this 2,300 days is a very controversial number, and what in the world does it mean? I am not sure anybody knows what it means. To tell you the truth, I will give you three suggestions. One, it's definitely not. A fellow named William Miller thought it meant 2,300 years, starting in 457 BC. He figured that Christ would return in 1843. Do you think he was right? No, he wasn't. When it didn't happen, he recalculated and came to 1844. He wasn't right. When that didn't happen, a lady named Ellen G. White came along and said that Jesus really did come in 1844, but only those on the inside knew about it, and that was the start of the Seventh-day Adventists, came out of this. Other interpretations. None of these, I don't know exactly how they fit. I don't know if we just don't have enough information. One suggestion is that it's 2,300 literal complete days, which is a little about 6 1/3 years. And some say that it refers to the time of when Antiochus Epiphanes put his own priest into the temple, installed his own priest as high priest, until the time that Judas Maccabeus cleansed the temple. That's what Hanukkah is a celebration about. And that was about 6 1/3 years. So some say it's that time period. Others say that this phrase that's used, 2,300 days, that the literal word for days is morning evenings. And so some have suggested that it's 2,300 of the morning and evening sacrifices, which would be, you cut that in half of the number of actual days, would be 1,150 days. And that is close, we think, to when he actually sacrificed the pig, to when Judas Maccabeus cleansed the altar, which is about 3 years or so. Whether it's that or not, I don't know. I'm not sure we have all the evidence for what it is. It may be something that we just don't know yet. And so we'll move on. Verse 15. Then it happened when I, Daniel, had seen the vision, was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the visions. That guy sound familiar? Gabriel? Does anybody remember anything about Gabriel? Does Gabriel ring a bell? There you go. He announces a lot of things, that Gabriel. He's really involved there. And so, Gabriel. And so he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. And he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Now he was speaking with me. I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be. Now, I don't know if this is really the lesson you came here to hear tonight. But the point of this is that there's trouble ahead. Now think about it from Daniel's perspective. Think of what his nation has gone through. I mean, they went through the whole mess of being in Egypt for the 400 years as slaves and everything. And then Moses came and they were delivered and they got started. They got their place, you know, and they settled down and eventually, you know, in their promised land. Then they goofed up and they got hauled off to Babylon and other parts around the world. And Daniel's sitting at the end of that time. And he knows he's getting close. It's getting close to going back. And, you know, if I was in Daniel's spot, I would be thinking, boy, finally be done with all this trouble. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. You know, we've just been through such a mess, and finally we're about done. And then he gets this thing, this prophecy about the Medes and the Persians and the Greeks, and then this weird guy, which we know is Antiochus Epiphanes, who's going to do horrible things to the nation of Israel. He's going to cause horrible things happening. And the point is that there's trouble ahead. There's still trouble ahead. You know, unless the Lord takes us to heaven, like right now, which is okay. Is everybody in favor? Maybe we should have a vote here. Maybe that could help convince the Lord. Is everybody in favor of going home tonight? Would we all go home? Does anybody want to go? Would we all be ready for heaven tonight? I know Dan's not quite ready. Okay. But you know, I think we're all ready for it. But unless we go home tonight, you know what? There still may be troubled times ahead. And that may not be what you and I want to hear. But I don't know about you. Sometimes when I get through, because life seems to be like that. I think I'm about crossing the great divide in a couple months. I'm going to cross the big 5-0. And I'm going to be, I will be, you can call me the Ancient of Days, you know. That's fine. I understand that. And I'm about to cross that big divide. And I think I'm beginning to get it that life is filled with trouble. I just, you know, and not just that, well, you get over the first couple times and then it's smooth sailing. Now, I don't know about you. Has anybody's life been like that? Where you got past the first couple and then for the rest of your life it's been smooth sailing? Has anybody? I don't know. I know you're just all a bunch of losers here, right? Because you probably all have tough times too, like me, right? Yeah, we haven't got past those first couple times. You know, maybe I'm working on number two or something. I don't know. But gang, there is still going to be trouble in this life. We don't rest from the trouble till we get to heaven, till we get to Jesus. A guy was down in Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. Anybody been there? Fisherman's Wharf, great place. Left San Francisco's Fisherman's Wharf. Left Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. Guy's down at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco when he saw a seafood restaurant and a sign on the specials board which read, "Big lobster tails, $5 each." Does anybody know anything about lobster? Does that sound like a good deal? Lobster tails, big ones for $5? I mean, that's amazed at the great value. He said to the waitress, $5 each for lobster tails? Is that correct? Yes, she said. It's our special just for today. Well, he said, they must be little lobster tails. No, she said. It's the really big lobster. Are you sure they aren't green lobster tails and maybe a little bit tough? No, she said, it's the really big lobster, really big red lobster, big red lobster tails, $5 each. Well, maybe they're old lobster tails. No, they're definitely today's. Today's big red lobster tails, $5 each. He repeated it to himself. He was just amazing. And he said, here's my $5. So she said, she took the money, led him to a table where she invited him to sit down. And she sat down next to him, put her hand on his shoulder, leaned over close to him and said, "Now once upon a time, there was a really big red lobster." You know, we're thinking about a nice big dinner and we get just a nice story instead. Things don't always turn out the way we expect them to, do they? And sometimes, gang, there is trouble ahead. Not to put us into a tailspin and fear or whatever, but it's reality. I think about Daniel and I think about his precious people, the Jews. And I think about that, what a sobering warning this could be for them. You know what? There are still a few troublesome times up around the corner. It's on the roadmap. There are still some trouble up ahead. 1 Peter 4:12, Peter says this, "Do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you," as though some strange thing happened to you. But that's what happens, isn't it? I mean, you get one of those whoppers and you go, where did that come from? You wonder, where did that come from? I've had some of those, you know, where it's nice when you get the smooth sailing, you know, the week or two, the smooth sailing, you know, or maybe it's a month or two. I love that. I love smooth sailing. And sometimes when those storms hit, boy, but gang, just be ready. Just be ready. 1 Thessalonians 5:8 says, "But let us who are of the day be sober, put on the breastplate of faith and love, and as hit the helmet, the hope of salvation." I like 1 Corinthians 6:13 in the King James. It says this, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, and be strong." I want to quit like a man. But I think that's what he meant. 1 Corinthians 16:13, King James says, quit ye like men, but it means be brave. You know, act like men. Be a man. Now that, I like that. That I like. I like the quit ye like men too. I like that. Now, prophecy buffs, he says in verse 19, I'm showing you what will happen in the latter time of the indignation. That is a technical phrase. He ain't talking about just Antiochus Epiphanes. He's talking about our latter days. Verse 20, there's going to be something in here in these last few verses that speaks of the latter days. There's going to be a double fulfillment. This person Antiochus Epiphanes was, he will be, in a sense, a picture of someone yet to come, which we know as the Antichrist. Verse 20, the ram which you saw having two horns there, the kings of Media and Persia. We saw that. Verse 21, the male goat is Greece. Verse 22, as for the broken horn, blah, blah, we saw that. Verse 23, and in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. Now, there is a primary fulfillment, and that's Antiochus Epiphanes. But there is a secondary fulfillment, and we believe that that's the Antichrist. That these next couple of verses are descriptive of this person we know as the Antichrist. Is double fulfillment, is that a real deal? Well, yeah. You look at the prophecies about Elijah coming for the, before the day of the great day of the Lord, coming of the Lord. Well, there's a double fulfillment there. John the Baptist was a fulfillment. And we believe there is still yet to come another Elijah coming. So we think this is that same kind of a principle. Let's see. And there are parallels between Antiochus and the Antichrist. Both will have some kind of authority over Israel. Both will persecute the saints. Both will magnify himself as God. Both will end the sacrifice in the temple. And their abomination of desolations are pretty close. If you do the 2300 morning evenings as 3.5 years, that's very close. It says he understands sinister schemes. Start the spooky music. Dun, 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 dun. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. The Bible says that the Antichrist, his power will be from Satan, from the dragon. That's Revelation chapter 13. It says, he shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Talking about the persecution of the Jews that is yet to come. Verse 25, through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. How about that? Isn't that lovely? Just when you think everything's tanking, you know, in the world. He will cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. You know, there's a great battle that everybody knows the name. Everybody's heard of Armageddon. I mean, it's a popular word. It's, I mean, movies are made with the title in it, you know, Armageddon. We all know it's some big, we think World War III, Armageddon, and everything. You realize, and this is described in Revelation 16 and in Revelation 19. Armageddon, the Antichrist will be at the center of it. He will gather the nations of the world. But guess who they're going to fight? Armageddon is not about the nations fighting each other. Armageddon is about the world fighting Jesus when he comes back. Do you understand that? In Revelation chapter 19, it says, the beast, and I saw the beast, the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. Is that gall or what? To think that they're going to expect Jesus to return and expect they're going to win. Isn't that amazing? That's what Armageddon is all about. Verse 25, but he shall be broken without human means. It says in Revelation, the sword coming out of his mouth. I think he just says a word. Maybe it's boo or something, you know. And the Antichrist freaks. And the vision of the evenings and the mornings, which was told is true, therefore seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. That's our future. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. Afterward, I arose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood that. Isn't that interesting? You know, Daniel's always the one everybody calls in to interpret the visions. And here's one that's just a whopper. He's just going, whoa, what is this all about? Let's stand and pray.